Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome to News and Views. I'm your host, Rob Schofield. It's hard to believe that it's still the case in 21st century America, but there's simply no denying the fact that racism and racist practices continue to infect our systems of law enforcement and criminal justice. For black men in particular, unprovoked confrontations with law enforcement are frequently an unavoidable and terrifying reality of life. Earlier this week, I got a chance to discuss this issue as well as several other matters related to the ongoing awakening on matters of race that seems to be taking place across our country with State Senator Valerie Fouché of Chatham and Orange Counties. In addition to offering her takes on some of the big picture issues, Senator Fouché was kind enough to share some of the fears and indignities that she, an African-American mom, has had to face in her own life. Well, Senator Valerie Fouché, welcome back to News and Views. It's really nice of you to take some time out of your schedule to be with us.
Thank you so much for having me. My pleasure.
Well, so obviously so much going on in the world right now. You're in the middle of a legislative session, but I know that civil rights have always been a huge part of your being involved in politics. Can you talk to us about your reaction to the developments that have been going on right now, the fight for an end to police misconduct and the whole movement to sort of open white America's eyes to what's going on in the world?
Wow, you said a mouthful. It is very interesting to be in this moment and to be a mother of two young African-American males. My sons are 33 and 36, and having raised two young men with whom we had to have the talk when they were ages 13 and 10, I think, were the ages they were when we talked to them about how they were to comport themselves when dealing with the police, even though I was an employee at the Chapel Hill Police Department. So
my goodness,
to be in this moment and to see that finally cries for help. I mean, basically what African-American have been asking for is help. See what's going on. See how we're being mistreated in the streets of America with a death penalty for crimes that don't mandate the death penalty, or the death penalty, even when we're not committing crimes, we're being killed by those who have been sworn to serve and protect. And so it is heartening that there is some light shone on this type of criminal behavior, but it's also so disheartening to realize that it took the whole world watching these modern day lynchings occur before their very eyes. And so I want it to be that in this moment that all of the attention is not just about what law enforcement is doing, but for a change to look at systemic racism for what it really is and to understand that there are root causes of what we're now seeing that have not been addressed because they have not been acknowledged in any real way. And so now to see all of these companies and city councils and a number of entities and agencies saying, okay, this is a real thing and something needs to be done about it.
I guess there is some encouragement there that people are acknowledging it. We still have an awful long way to actually go to have the kind of policy changes, I suppose, that would reflect a real full recognition of this problem. You know, there's a new task force for racial equity and criminal justice that the governor has created. I wonder if you had any thoughts about whether that is a positive step, whether that might maybe lead to some of these kinds of policy changes we need to see.
Well, it is certainly a positive step, and I am grateful to Governor Cooper for not wasting time, for putting resources into place so that, you know, we can start talking about remedies. The one thing that I think we all can agree on is that there cannot be any accountability if there is no acknowledgement. So in any of these situations, the first thing is acknowledgement that this is a real thing and something has to be done about it. So kudos to him for that and having put those persons at the head of this task force. is very encouraging.
It is that. I wonder if, you know, there are obviously other aspects to the social unrest we've seen in recent weeks that undoubtedly have some connection to this health pandemic that's affecting us and so disproportionately affecting people of color, people of low income, people who have no choice but to put themselves at risk. I wonder if you have any thoughts about the state of our battle against the coronavirus, what's going good, what's not going so well. What are your thoughts on that issue right now, another huge issue in our public debate right now?
Well, of course, you know, I think that we would have been in a better position had we expanded Medicaid. That is still something that should be at the forefront of our efforts to ensure that health care is a right and not just a privilege for those who are better off. I think that when we look at who's being affected, the people who are on the front lines, those who were among the least of us who were just asking for a decent living wage of $15 per hour. Most of these people are making somewhere between $7.25 and maybe $10 an hour. And they went from being just classified as our lowest wage earners to essential personnel.
Yeah, the irony there.
And these are people who are so very important who make the least in terms of wages. And so when you consider that these are the very people who fall into the Medicaid gap, these are the rare people who cannot afford to have health care. These are the people who know that if they don't come to work, they don't get sick pay. If they don't work, they don't get paid. And so they make decisions that are not just only not in their best interest, but certainly are not in the best interest of the community as it relates to community spread. And they have been put into a dilemma where they have to determine whether they're going to continue to work to pay their rent or to keep food on the table or to buy medicine or whatever, against not being able to make the right decision to be tested. And if testing positive, to self-isolate.
Right. We're talking with Senator Valerie Fouché of the North Carolina Senate about a whole raft of issues. She's in the middle of the 2020 legislative session. Another issue that's sort of front and center in this debate over the health pandemic, of course, is reopening, and in particular, reopening our colleges, reopening our schools. And I know that there are an awful lot of people who have real concerns about whether it's really going to be possible to do this in a way. You know, at UNC, for instance, which is, of course, near and dear to your heart, how do we do this? How are we going to be able to pull this off and bring thousands of people back to close quarters? What's your take on where things stand right now with reopening our education system?
I wish I had an answer for that one, Rob. Now, this is a situation where I am probably most fearful. I just don't see that we are at a point where what I'm hearing about reopening, we're in a position to do it to that level.
Yeah.
I think that we need to take a step back and again look at the numbers, pay attention to the science, see where we are in terms of the numbers declining. If they are not, how can we even fathom bringing those numbers of people back to a situation where you're opening it up for community spread?
It seems like a Herculean task, and one I think maybe we thought a few months ago might be, you know, things would have died down. But at this point, it seems as if the path of the virus and its spread continues to rise in North Carolina. We're really not seeing that big dip we had hoped for, and it seems to be affecting so many aspects of our lives.
And I think in an effort to get back to normal, as much as I hate the term new normal, we just have to realize that some things may never be the same. What was normal may never be normal again. And so determining how we move forward in a way that is safe, in a way that we are working to boost the economy again, but to be in a position where we could really possibly overwhelm our healthcare system such that we're taking resources to make sure that we are treating the virus, but we're not treating other diseases, other chronic situations where people indeed need health care, but we're pushing forward an agenda that does not lead to us being safe. And I don't see where that's logical.
Our time is limited, but there's a positive story I wanted to talk about with you before we let you go, and that's this legislation that you were involved with that finally passed the General Assembly after a long, tortured path. It's called the Second Chance Act, and it takes some really important steps towards giving people who were formerly incarcerated a chance to get their lives back together. And it seemed like, boy, at least one happy story of Republicans and Democrats coming together this session in Raleigh.
Well, you know, I'll say this about the Second Chance Act. I have been somewhat disheartened with the fact that the General Assembly has not addressed the issue of racism, particularly as it has related to the criminal acts of law enforcement. And to see that now, in this moment, if there is any reaction that we can say that the General Assembly has put forward is the passage of this. When, you know, when you think about one of the primary sponsors was Senator Floyd McKissick, who is no longer with the General Assembly. The irony of that possibility, you know, it could have happened over a year ago, but now we're here. And the idea that, you know, young folk who committed crimes between the ages of 16 and 18 to be able to have those records expunged if they were not violent crime, to give them an opportunity to start fresh, giving them the opportunity for employment and housing and those things that those criminal records for nonviolent offenses were keeping them from moving forward in their lives. You know, the fact that the waiting periods for expungements will be shortened. And even, you know, some misdemeanors and some other infractions that now they can be expunged regardless of a perpetrator's age. You know, that's movement. You know, that's getting to some of these underlying root causes of what we're seeing today. When people don't have a chance to move forward in a positive manner, then sometimes their behavior is not what we would want it to be. But we've boxed them into a corner where sometimes they feel desperate. This is a chance to move forward in a positive manner. I'm glad to see us address it and move it forward.
Well, it's one very small step, but we hope it's the harbinger of many, many more to come. We thank you so much for the leadership you bring to the General Assembly every day in trying to move forward positive solutions. Please keep your spirits up and stay safe, and perhaps we'll talk again later this summer and hopefully talk about some more positive news.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Rob.
Coming up next, a leading scholar helps us better understand the meaning of Confederate monuments and the movement to put an end to honoring white supremacy. Don't go away.